Blog Talk Radio.
A Monday warrior, mean stride. Today's Tom Sawyer, mean pride.
Good afternoon on the East Coast, good morning on the West Coast, and a great day to you wherever and, oh, by the way, whenever you may be listening. Another great week of archive listens to the show, The Power of Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? And speaking of wanting more, people always want more of this guy. He's the toughenest, talkinest chief operating officer from Charleston, South Carolina, keeping life simplified out at South Carolina Federal Credit Union. You know him as a lovable, tough talking Troy Hall. Hey, Troy, how are you?
Hey, I am doing great, Jason. This is going to be an exciting, exciting show because we get a chance to wrap up from our great conversation with Miriam last week.
Yes, we do. Yes. Let me start first by thanking Miriam for taking some time out of her not terribly busy last couple weeks of high school, but she still took some time away from her end-of-year fun and frivolity to join us on the program. Troy, my first impression that I got from the show, even before I listened back to it, and you can kind of tell me what you thought, I got the sense that I was listening to the show while I was doing the show, and that's only happened a couple of times. We've had a couple of guests on the show. Mandy Zerbrick, when she was talking about the rebranding, I found myself almost listening to the show as a listener who's interested in this kind of stuff. What kind of thoughts did you have when we finished up with Miriam last week?
Well, I'm very interested. As you know, this just falls right in line with my global leadership and entrepreneurship studies that I'm involved in, and spending time looking at the Generation Y, but also understanding the Generation Z, which Miriam really qualifies probably more for the tail end of a Y than a Z, but nonetheless, it's still applicable because any of those individuals who are on the cusp, then they have generational preferences and characteristics from really both. They really become a hybrid of both of them during that particular time period. And so I was just so excited because I could relate. And so I was sitting here feverishly trying to make notes and trying to remember to talk, you know, when I was supposed to. But between the four characteristics that we identified in that opening conversation with her and then started listening to her talk, and before you know it, I mean, we could create alignments of her messaging in with these four topics. I mean, very well. And the good news is, you know, for individuals who want to go back, even after we talk today, and go back and listen to the one from Miriam, because they'll have more insight into what she actually said when they listen to her, I mean, that'll be helpful. And you did a really cool thing this week that you're introducing, which are sound bites.
Yeah, I actually, a lot of little bits of history were made last week. I think it may be, and you can, we'd have to go back and check it. It might be the first time where I think you actually talked more than I did, which is always unique, and the studio audience might think preferable. But I like I said, on this show, the key signature is always going to be generational stuff. And so you used the term exquisite interview. You said, thank you for this exquisite interview. And like I said, little historical things. I don't think we've ever planned to debrief a show based upon one guest while we were still live on the air. We did that last week. And I think this is the first time we've ever gone back and taken bits of the interview that we're going to play on the show today. And I completely agree with you, folks. If you're listening to this show in the archive or you're listening to it live, you're probably listening to it in the archive. 99% of our listens come in the archive. I would go back and listen to Miriam's interview if you haven't, even if you want to fast forward to the interview portion of it. It was, for me, just a very charming young lady, and I had the same reaction you did. All the stuff that we've talked about for so many years about Generation Y and Z, and I think people get a little hung up on, well, what generation am I in? Look, Miriam's generation is part of that new youth market. And I don't think people are talking about them the right way. I saw, like I think I told you the other day, an agenda item marketing the Generation Y on one of these credit union conferences, and they talked about Facebook and stuff like that. Well, Facebook has been completely that started out as a youth marketing tool, but Troy, I don't think anybody considers Facebook as a youth marketing tool anymore, do they?
No, they don't. And realistically, what you're finding is that the younger generations are moving away from Facebook, and it's primarily because us older folks have started to adopt it.
Right.
And I think it's kind of interesting, but I didn't have enough time to go back in history, but we might be able to call this from our own empirical data, where there was an event that we sort of created and did as our youngster event. And our parents then joined in. All of a sudden, it wasn't cool anymore, so then we stopped doing it because the parents then took it over. So,
right.
You know, and I'm sure there's got to be some examples of that. But the other thing I want to do for us early on in the show before we get into dissecting some of the call from last week is I need to clarify that I misspoke, and I actually made the reference of her social intelligence, and the correct terminology is emotional intelligence is what that was the connection that I made between her learning from mistakes, and I made the connection with Abraham Lincoln, and it really is emotional intelligence. I was so wrapped up in the whole social media concept that I misspoke and called it social intelligence. And for those individuals with a particular amount of acumen out there, I wanted to make sure that they knew that I caught on to that. But
well, I think you actually
live show.
I
like
you corrected
shows,
yourself.
Can't correct it. You know,
yeah.
You just gotta keep
I thought you did correct it last week on the air. I thought you did say emotional intelligence the second time. Well, hey, listen, folks,
okay.
When we get back from the break, we're going to go back a week ago today in what was one of my absolute favorite interviews. And I'll tell you, it was one of my favorite interviews because when I you know, talked to Miriam before the show, I really wasn't sure how it was going to go. I thought she might be a little quiet. She might be a little shy. She told me she was a little nervous. But once we got rolling, like I said, one of my absolute favorite interviews we've ever done on the program. And so we'll start breaking it down right after this.
You're listening to The Power of Performance. If your brand were a band, would you leave your audience wanting more?
That is right. The show where the talk is hot, but the hosts are...
are hotter than hot ever hot has ever been.
Center of the sun... hot. We bring you the information for free that many of you are still inexplicably paying for. Her name is Miriam. She's graduating this weekend, and she is a senior at New Braunfels High School, and last week joined us on the show. And one of the first things we talk about, Troy, you might want to remind the audience, those four characteristics of the Gen Zers.
Yes, and so the research, and again, this is really more toward the Gen Y. This is Gen Y research because the Gen Z is still out there being developed because of the way that generational goes. But the Gen Y group, we've really narrowed it down into four primary characteristics for this group. One is their entrepreneurial spirit and the way they approach their work selections or the way they manage relationships. The hyperconnectivity that they have, the collaborative way in which they approach ideas and the sharing of information, and the last one is the meaning that they bring either to work or to the social purpose that they have with how they engage and become engaged either with various groups or with products and things of that nature. So those four characteristics are entrepreneurial spirit, hyperconnectivity, collaboration, and meaningful work or purposeful social event.
Well, one of the first things that really got my attention was when you asked her about her texting habits, and this is what she had to say about that.
I don't know a number. I probably text at least 3 people every night for just kind of sporadically over, I'd say, like 8 hours.
Now, when you talked about hyperconnectivity, Troy, did you think that she fit into that you know.
Well, yeah, characteristic. I mean, yeah. There's three or four people, and she's texting them for 8 hours. Come on.
That was my exact reaction. I will never forget when I was in high school, for my 16th birthday, my parents got me my own phone line. Not a cell phone, because they didn't exist in 1983, 84 the way they do now, but it was my own line where people could actually call me and the phone would ring in my bedroom instead of down in the kitchen, connected to the kitchen wall. And I got to tell you, at the time, that was a big deal. And I might have called one person. Every night, you call your eighth grade girlfriend and you talk on the phone and you listen to the radio together and pretend you're together and listening to music together and fall asleep. I fall asleep all the time on the phone, talking to my little eighth grade, ninth grade girlfriend back in those days, and in high school, 10th and 11th grade. But the concept of keeping up with somebody 8 or 9 hours a day, I thought that was very interesting.
Well, it was, and especially because now you have to consider, she said it at night. She didn't say I was texting during the day. So I can figure, okay, 8 hours during the day, activities are happening. We're talking like, so we came home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and from 3 to 11, I have to stay connected to these folks. I can't possibly be away from them. So from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. going to bed, for those 8 hours, I'm on the phone. So I don't know. I just kind of thought that was.
I thought it was charming. She said, and mostly the texting is just to say I'm thinking of you. I'm thinking of you. It's not enough to say the next morning, I was thinking of you last night. No, I'm thinking of you right now, so I'm going to send you a little smiley face, LOL, text message, whatever. I thought that was very interesting. Of course.
Yeah,
she also
really important that connectivity. And there were lots of other examples on it, but we'll come back to some of those later. I want to make sure that we don't miss out on some of the other stuff that she brought up.
The next thing is, and I thought this was a bit of, gosh, I'm trying to say the right way to say this. I thought this was a bit of an indictment of some credit unions. There are two multi-billion-dollar credit unions that have branches that are walking distance from the parking lot where Miriam meets her friends every morning. And when we asked her about financial literacy training, she confided that she had not had any except a Dave Ramsey class at the church, I think when she was in eighth grade. And I thought that was very, very interesting. And so we asked her a little bit about budget and money and stuff like that, and this is what she had to say.
I know it's really important to have a budget, so That's really where I'm starting, just making a budget, putting aside a little every month so it can go into my savings now. I do not have a credit card, and I know that's something that I'm going to get bombarded with in college. That's what I've been told. So
yes.
I think I'll deal with the credit card maybe toward the end of college or after college, once I have a little more financial stability with a job and with everything like that, so that I can actually go to my bank account with some reliability instead of just hoping that my parents put enough money in my account for me to get gas.
What struck you about that part of the conversation, Troy?
Well, it was her own personal accountability and the fact that her desire was to do it on her own. It was important that she took into consideration a lot of information, a lot of material that was around her. She was smart to recognize that she would be bombarded with information. Mm-hmm. She knew that the beginning of financial planning begins with a budget. So all of those traditionally represent that entrepreneurial spirit by which you will manage yourself as though you are responsible for everything about you. Not that, I'm going to be the person that lives off of whatever my parents give me. And it didn't come across like that at all. And the other thing that we also recognized, which was off the air, but through some of the information that is that one of the jobs that she has had in her past was as a nanny. Well, you don't get much more entrepreneurial than that.
True. That's
so
absolutely
again,
true.
Again, looking at those characteristics and matching that information up, I mean, really, because prior to the call, and again, just reminding everyone, because it says, oh, yeah, this is really great, you set her up. She didn't know that I was going to make the connection to these four things. I don't speak to the guests until they actually come on the show. It's one of the ways I think that creates the magic that we have is that because you have the familiarity with them, and I then can then work from the spontaneity of what is actually being said and how we're going to do it. I mean, we may have some idea that we're going to cover generational topics and so forth of that nature, but we don't plan out every word that we're going to say ahead of time. If so, I'm sure that when you listen back, we would sound a lot better.
Yeah.
If we planned out.
Well, I'm sure, but you're absolutely right. You know, we have. For the folks that don't know, the guest will generally call in about 10 to 12 minutes before the show goes live, and then you'll call in about 10 minutes before the show goes live. And we might have just a few seconds to get acquainted. But, no, I when I sent her the talking points, I didn't know that you were going to drop those four characteristics and ask her to speak to those. And I think that's one reason I said, as I said before, I found myself listening to the show like a listener versus – a host, because it was unfolding in what I thought was such a charming and honest way, which is something you get with the radio format. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, you asked her some questions about career, which I thought lined up perfectly with what you said about the need to be doing purposeful and meaningful work, and I thought it was one of the most fascinating parts of the show, and we'll talk about it right after this. Broadcasting live from the studios of eloquentonline.net and beautiful little overcast, New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof, and joined as always by my partner in crime, Tough Talkin' Troy Hall from Charleston, South Carolina, South Carolina Federal Credit Union's lovable chief operating officer. We are doing the debrief of last week's show, Generation Next, Miriam, high school senior, and of course, when you get to high school and you celebrate graduation, it is that symbolic moment where you're going from childhood to adulthood, college to the real world in many ways. And of course, Troy, as you and I know, the real world requires real money and the ability to pay real bills and stuff like that. And you asked her a question about her career choices, and again, it ended up lining up beautifully. So I'm going to play her. It's a little long, it's about 2 minutes, but I thought it was fascinating. And this is what she had to say about it.
Well, I have to say that my decision-making right now has been based mostly on future job stability. And I want to go into a field where I'll be assured that I'll have a job when I graduate from college. I've been hearing all about how everybody's having to move back home and there's not enough jobs and, you know, people are losing their jobs. So I have thought a lot about the health field, and I know that there's always jobs in the health field. So I'm planning on either going into nursing and becoming a registered nurse or going my 4 years in college, getting a degree, and then applying for occupational therapy school and becoming an occupational therapist. So do
you find that that your decision is more about stability, or is it also about how you feel when you do the work?
It's a lot about how I feel. I like doing service jobs, and I know that personally I've always wanted to be in a field where I can help others. So in both nursing and occupational therapy, I can help out others. And I've always wanted to work with children since way back, and I've worked at vacation Bible schools over summers, and I've been a nanny before. So I know that children are in my future. And I feel like through nursing or occupational therapy, I can really embrace all the things that I love, you know, with interacting with people and socially, but I can also have the job stability.
What do you think of that, Troy?
Well, again, you know, I mean, we teed it up here, you know, it just really does align again. And what you're finding is that when she first spoke about the job, she's very pragmatic about it. It was the stability issue. And then it was, okay, well, what kind of a field then would offer me that stability? But also, the important aspect and what will keep her excited about it is the congruency of the field that she chooses in alignment with her goals and her values. And her values are those service-related ones where they create really a social purpose. I mean, people helping people. It's really we speak sometimes here specifically credit union-wise, but, I mean, that's what it is. It's the social purpose that the movement was founded on, which was people helping people. And so once again, you go back and look at the connection made with the meaningful work that she's doing, with the social aspect of it. I mean, it's the health field. She says, I like service jobs. She also reminded us again about the nanny part in the job, again, you know, taking a look at that, working with children. I mean, there's the purpose. So if we just stop for a second after making this connection, and if you were a marketing individual and you realistically have now probably more information than you need, you could go and enroll in another conference so that you could sit there and nod your head and learn some more stuff that you probably won't do anything with. But if you did want to do something with this, you would begin to start looking at how you would craft information that aligned with social purposes, because it speaks very strongly to this group, and it's also where their attention is going to be for the next 4 or 5 years. Their attention is going to be on getting themselves prepared for their jobs and where they're going to be able to make a contribution to life afterwards. If I were looking at it from a from financial services and I wanted to say, well, what types of products would she need, then I would definitely, aside from the traditional low-hanging fruit products, I would start thinking, how do I create a true entrepreneurial-spirited business account that actually allowed this individual to work in the health field? Now, you know, as an occupational therapist, or you may or may not know that, and I apologize for setting it up that way, but the reality is that they can be employed as contract employees.
Mm-hmm. So can nurses.
Therapists, yeah, and nurses and things. So they do not, because when we had the situation for my parents, when we had aides who assisted us for my mom and dad, they were people we hired independently. They worked for themselves. Right. They didn't work for this big agency. As a matter of fact, you get a better deal when you can find qualified individuals working themselves, because you're not paying the overhead of an agency.
That's right.
And
that's
so
right.
We were able to really get 7-day care for my mom and dad, that had we gone through an agency, I may have only been able to get 3 or 4. But I was able to get 7 because we went a completely different route. So, again, tying all this back in together is – we need to look for those products and services that fit the need. We have to stop creating products and services and hoping we'll find people who will want them. We have
right.
to start knowing what people want and create them to fit it. I mean, it's just like sometimes we get so backwards in the process. But
well,
anyway, that's enough.
Well, I know what, and I agree with you. You know, it's checking and savings, we all get that, but you can hear when you're talking to her. And of course, if you listen to the interview last week, you know her dad worked at a big employer here. The largest employer in New Braunfels, the scooter store that went out of business. And she talked about how he didn't have a college degree, but had managed to make a very good living for 26 years at the scooter store. And she said it had a bit of an impact on her, back to that emotional intelligence, learning from the challenges and the setbacks of others. You used the word that I used, I think, 3 or 4 times last week, pragmatic, and I thought that was very, very interesting. In this next clip, I put this one in here because I'm gonna talk about it at the end. She talks a little bit about the technology that she likes in her calculus class, and listen to it right here.
My calculus class is actually extremely, it's all based on technology. All of our worksheets and everything, he has his own website, everything is online, he posts it and we do it, and in class he has a smart board that he's had for 3 years that he uses to teach us everything. Everybody now brings their iPads from home to class and they take notes on their iPads. So, I mean, there's definitely a lot of technology going on in our school, and I know they just replaced all of our PCs and everything with Macs.
Hmm.
So next year we're going to be an advocate for Apple.
Now the reason I dropped that in there wasn't to further celebrate the Mac versus Windows thing that's going on in the country, but when I was in high school, and actually one of my earliest memories as a child is my father, he used to work in the computer room at Laredo Air Force Base, and I mean it was the old-fashioned computer room, and he would bring home the punch cards, and we would make card houses with these computer punch cards. My dad has been around computers since they were you know, required to take up a full room to spit out a logistical program on resupplying a squadron of Air Force pilots in the Philippines. And so when I got into high school, I took a class called computer science, and I did, like most of my classes in high school, I did terrible. I brought home a D in computer science, which I thought my dad was really going to be embarrassed about, given the fact that he'd been around computers. And he said, oh, it's not a big deal. You're learning how to program computers, and by the time, you know, you're an adult, the computers will already be programmed. This is silly. You're not going to need to learn how to program a computer. And it really, I'm sure he meant it to make me feel better. What it succeeded in doing was compel me to think, well, what else am I getting prepared for that's not relevant anymore? And when I look back on it, I think some of my cynicism wasn't entirely misplaced. I felt like we were being prepared in the 1980s for a workforce of the 1970s, not the other way around. And I think Miriam's generation, you heard her talking about smart boards and iPads and stuff like that, and the technology stuff that she thought was so cool. I honestly believe she talked that she took a Photoshop elective. I think that in many ways, Miriam's generation, that fourth cycle, is actually using the technology that they will be able to defer to when they're adults. And I honestly didn't feel that way when I was in high school.
I think that is always a challenge, is making sure that what you're doing today can be relevant for many years in the future, because you're creating an investment of which you want that investment to pay off. What I wanted to mention to you about the technology in relationship to the generations, I know in previous calls I have quoted Dr. Tim Elmore's book, Generation, and basically what he says in that is he talks about how that generation group was the first generation to surpass its parents in knowledge and use of technology. What we're seeing now as we get closer to the Gen Z group, and so this little bit of data is emerging, and a lot of it is because of the, realistically, you're looking at iPhones and you're looking at those smartphone technologies. We do statistics and we talk about the number of adults. We know that about 68% of the adult population actually manages themselves somehow through a smartphone technology. What that statistic does not include are the number of 12 to 14-year-olds who actually have the smart technology. So where this is all going to is this. The generation that we're starting to see now, and the way we're seeing our public move, is becoming technology dependent, not necessarily technology savvy. And so the difference is where your parent was technology savvy in the ability to program, and what the message was is that it's going to be available and already done, it really migrates us to being technology dependent. When we had to learn to program the VCR and all that stuff, now many of those functions are already pre-programmed into right. What you're doing. It doesn't require you to have to know too much about it. And the other thing is the intuitiveness, and that's the whole, I know this Apple Mac, and I don't want to get into a big, you know, about that. Right. But what Mac really does is it's intuitive. And right. So it's like it's very easy. When my 1.5-year-old granddaughter knows to flip her finger on the iPhone to go from one thing to the next, when she can actually find her version of the game that she wants to play on the screen, and she can do that. And when my 4-year-old granddaughter can look over the shoulder of my wife and say, Nana, you need to do this in order to win the game, then you know that there's a lot of intuitiveness going on in the process, and the speed by which young people learn is so much greater than it is as you get older. Our propensity to retain knowledge decreases the older we get. So it's just an important aspect of this generation, all this generational information, because it's not just necessarily indicative of the upcoming generations, but it's basically what we as a society is. We're becoming much more technology dependent than ever before.
Well, with about 30 seconds left on the show, Troy, any final thoughts about our interview last week?
I thought, again, it was exquisite. And the other thing I want to call attention to is TED TV. And I know this because several of my young friends and some of my family members who fit into this younger generation group, they're really into this TED TV. And the other thing I'll mention is that my grandson is very much interested. He's 12, and he's very much interested in how things are put together. Mm-hmm. Now, I think that's because he's going to end up being an engineer when he grows up, because he's very interested in how things work and how they run. And he loves that show, How It Was Made.
Right.
And but this TED TV is another thing. And the other thing about it, is, which is really interesting, is because it's about technology, education, and design, it's kind of the types of things that that you may not necessarily want, but they're the types of things that there are needs for. So again, any time that you associate a need with something, it has much more of a social purpose. And when I say social purpose, I mean a purpose that meets the society than it does the desire for the individual to have it.
Well, again, I want to thank Miriam for joining us. It was one of those moments on the radio show where, as I was listening to the show and how the conversation was unfolding, it was one of those shows I couldn't wait to listen back to, unencumbered by the need to host the show. And of course, even though we've reached our time limit today, we get to talk about this every week if we want to on the Power Performance, the show that asks the question, if your brand were a band, would you leave the audience wanting more? Or you need to understand that audience. And, of course, we do that here on the program, talking about how best to intentionally engage audience of all different demographics. And we'll certainly keep that conversation going every Wednesday. Hey, man, you have a great, great week out there in beautiful Charleston, South Carolina, where even when it rains,
the sun still shines.
That's right. His name is Tough Talkin' Troy Hall. And until next week, my name is Jason Dias, broadcasting live from the offices of eloquentonline.net in beautiful New Braunfels, Texas, Republic thereof. Go out there, have a great week, and until next Wednesday, we'll talk to you soon.